Back in 1924, the critic Edmund Wilson wrote a review of a new young poet. Mr. Cummings' eccentric punctuation is, I think, typical of his immaturity as an artist. It is Mr. Cummings' theory that punctuation marks, capitalization, and arrangement on the page should be used not as merely conventional indications of structure, which makes it easier for the reader to pay attention to the meaning conveyed by the words themselves, but as independent instruments of expression susceptible of infinite variation. The results which it yields are ugly. His poems are hideous on the page. He insists upon shattering even the most conventional and harmless of his productions into an explosive system of fragments. Edmund Wilson is not alone. Cummings often divided words on the page to the point that they are like puzzles that we must put together before we can read them. This style often evokes strong feelings. People love or hate his poetry. I am one of those who love his writing. A man of unconventional feelings and beliefs, E.E. Cummings is my favorite poet. He took pride in the fact that he was born at home. To him, the dependence on hospitals for birth signaled an unfortunate depersonalization in American life. The year of his birth was 1894. The city was Cambridge, Massachusetts. He graduated from Harvard University, able to read and speak French, German, Latin, Greek, and Italian. But all his life, he despised intellectuals and wrote with fondness about clowns and waitresses. In World War I, the French imprisoned him as a spy in 1917 because he refused to answer yes when asked if he hated Germans. Some critics praised him as a great poet, but when he was 40, his mother had to finance the publication of his poems after 15 publishers turned him down. He hated crowds. He described California's Hollywood Bowl as an open-air auditorium seating 30,000 morons. But he made his home in the middle of Greenwich Village in Manhattan. He wrote with understanding and sensitivity about love, but he went through two painful divorces. He held only one paying job in his life and retired after 3 months. Most of the time he survived, just barely survived, on small gifts of money from family and friends. Cummings' parents and his three marriages inspired much of his poetry. Although the family lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, his father was the minister of an important Unitarian church in Boston, South Congregational Church. From the weekly sermons of his father, E.E. Cummings learned the values of New England Unitarians, a mixture of liberal theology and conservative social behavior. As a young man, Cummings rebelled against these conservative social standards. The conflict reached a head one evening when he borrowed his father's car, which had the word clergy printed on the back near the license plate. Later that night, the Boston police found that car illegally parked in front of a brothel. The story made the newspapers. Cummings later tried to put himself in his father's shoes. He tried to see things from the perspective of his father. And he wrote a letter he imagined that his father might have written. When you went to college, we began not to understand you. You fuddled your mind with tobacco, although I gave you the benefit of my experience on the subject. You refused to promise not to indulge in alcohol, thereby breaking your mother's heart. You evaded all my entreaties to go to the gymnasium to make your body strong. You took less and less personal care of yourself, though I assured you of what everybody knows, namely that a man is judged by his appearance. Finally, you picked your friends unwisely, though a man's companions are a criterion of his taste. Well, in spite of the tensions between father and son, after his father's death, Cummings wrote a romantic sketch of his father in which he described the man as a crack shot, a famous fly fisherman, a sailor, a woodsman, a canoeist, a photographer, a painter, a carpenter, an architect, a plumber, a teacher. And he wrote, "My father was a preacher who announced during the last war that the Gott mit uns boys were an heir, since the only thing which mattered was for man to be on God's side. And one beautiful Sunday in spring remarked from the pulpit that he couldn't understand why anyone had come to hear him on such a day, and horribly shocked his pew holders by crying, 'The kingdom of heaven is no spiritual roof garden, it's inside you.'" And Cummings wrote that his father's voice was so magnificent that he was called on to impersonate God speaking from Beacon Hill. E.E. Cummings was much more like his mother than his father. She did not care for fashion and believed in comfort in her clothes. She did not cook, she did not sew, and she had great difficulty with household accounts. Her son adopted all these traits. But although his mother was weak in practical responsibilities, she felt her life experiences deeply. She took great pleasure in a colorful sunset, in a kind act, and in a child's achievement. And she was deeply committed to her family and to a few close friends. Her son also adopted all of these traits. About his mother, he wrote, "She assured me that she grew up a shy, or as we now say, neurotic girl, who had to be plucked from under sofas whenever friends came to call. Whereas my father had created his Unitarianism, his own father being of the Christian of the hellfire variety, she had inherited hers. It was an integral part of herself. She expressed it as she breathed and as she smiled. The two indispensable factors in her life, my mother always maintained, were health and a sense of humor. Although her health eventually failed her, she kept her sense of humor to the beginning. The family owned a farm in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Reverend Cummings would preach for 9 months of the year in Boston and then drive his family up to spend 3 summer months at a farm in New Hampshire. When Cummings' father retired from the ministry, they visited the farm more often. In November of 1926, driving to New Hampshire, his mother and father encountered a sudden snowstorm, which cut visibility. Cummings described what happened next. A locomotive cut the car in half, killing my father instantly. When the two brakemen jumped from the halted train, they saw a woman standing, dazed but erect, beside a mangled machine with blood spouting, as the older said to me, out of her head. These two men took my 66-year-old mother by the arms and tried to lead her towards a nearby farmhouse. But she threw them off, strolled straight to my father's body, and directed a group of scared spectators to cover him. When this had been done, and only then, she let them lead her away. That was in 1926. His mother lived until 1947. The minister read a poem by her son at the memorial service. It recalls a rose garden at the family home in Cambridge, in which his mother took special pride. However, the poem is more than a memory of the past. It is a Unitarian view of death. If there are any heavens, my mother will, all by herself, have one. It will not be a pansy heaven nor a fragile heaven of lilies of the valley, but it will be a heaven of black red roses. My father will be deep like a rose, tall like a rose, standing near my, swaying over her, silent, with eyes which are really petals and see nothing with the face of a poet, really, which is a flower and not a face, with hands which whisper, this is my beloved. Suddenly in sunlight he will bow, and the whole garden will bow. In December of 1919, Cummings' first and only child was born, a beautiful baby girl named Nancy. There was only one problem. The mother of the child, Elaine Thayer, was married not to Cummings, but to Cummings' best friend. Eventually, a divorce occurred. Cummings married Elaine in a small private service conducted by his father. He legally adopted Nancy. For Elaine, he also composed an erotic poem. I like my body when it is with your body. It is so quite new a thing. Muscles better and nerves more. I like your body. I like what it does. I like its hows. I like to feel the spine of your body and its bones and the trembling firm smoothness and which I will again and again and again kiss. Cummings was 30 years old at the time of his first marriage. He loved to play with his daughter. He delighted in taking her to the Central Park Zoo or to F.A.O. Schwartz's toy store. He made up stories for her, which she found delightful. But he had no job, and his only income was a small monthly check sent by his parents. He lived in a cheap apartment in Greenwich Village. He ate all his meals in restaurants. He stayed up past midnight in conversation with friends, and he seldom rose before noon. After a few months of this lifestyle, Elaine demanded a divorce and refused to let him see Nancy. Although he was in love with his bohemian existence, Cummings was also in love with his wife and child. Deeply depressed by the divorce, he carried a revolver around with him for months, considering suicide. He overcame his depression by marrying a second time. The place was All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City. The bride was a beautiful woman named Anne Borden. Unfortunately for Cummings, Anne Borden was a heavy drinker. She passed out from drinking before the wedding, and the wedding party could barely revive her in time for the ceremony. After 3 stressful years, she also divorced Cummings and married a wealthy doctor. Of his grief at these losses, Cummings later wrote, "If I am losing, becoming separate from some deep spiritual influence, represented perhaps by a parent or a relative, perhaps by a girl with whom I've been and cannot even suspect that I am not still entirely in love, then I suffer torments. The loss, the separation is intolerable. Every moment of my experience is a new and differing agony for me, and the sum of these agonies equals the mystery of being born. But sooner or later, it suddenly occurs to me that this very experience was the most fortunate of my life. Then, and only then, does the curse wonderfully become a blessing, the disappearance and emergence, the agonizing departure and aesthetic arrival." Cummings found lasting happiness in his third marriage to Marion Morehouse. 12 years younger than he, Marion was a successful model. He wrote to her, "Sweet spring is your time, is my time, is our time. For springtime is love time, and viva sweet love." In the last 10 years of his life, Cummings finally could support himself as a writer. A young friend became his agent, arranging for lectures and negotiating fees. Cummings was a superb reader of his own work, both poetry and prose. On college campuses in the 1950s, he was enormously popular, often drawing standing room only crowds. The reading struck a responsive chord in the hearts of a new generation. For the first time, publishers actually made money publishing his poems. Yet in spite of his success, he remained a deeply reserved and private man. He turned down an invitation to visit President Kennedy at the White House. In the last year of his life, he recorded these feelings in his diary. "I never knew anyone as shy as me. Today, cold March wind, sun in and outing. As I stood sketching kids inside a playground, became aware that a Negro, a vaguely glimpsed human darkness with sensitive eyes, sitting merely and to my right, sad and lonesome, was eagerly watching me. Instantly I stopped shutting my notebook, and hurried away. What I wanted to do was express my appreciation of his obviously genuine interest by saying, "They're cute, aren't they?" and nodding towards the children. But what I did was exactly the opposite. And now, how I hate myself. In September of 1962, the shy poet and his wife, Marion Morehouse, were staying at the Cummings family farm in New Hampshire. After chopping firewood, Cummings collapsed. Marion rushed him to a small hospital where he died of a brain hemorrhage a few hours later. He was 68 years old. He was a Unitarian poet. Not only because he was a son of a prominent Unitarian minister, but also because his poetry reflects our religious identity in at least three ways. First, like us, Cummings preached the gospel of individualism. Cummings hated what he saw as the mass culture of America, and he hated even more what he saw as the mass culture in the dictatorship of communism. He felt that this authoritarian approach of mass culture shifts the development and expression of individual being and stifles it. He wrote, "To be nobody else but yourself in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you everybody else means to fight the hardest battle which any human being can fight and never stop fighting." Individualism. Secondly, like us, Cummings was playful. Now, there are critics who claim that Cummings never matured, and there may be critics who claim that Unitarian Universalists have never matured, never become adults. The critics argued that Cummings remained forever stuck in adolescence, filled with a spirit of mischief and a desire to outrage. Because of his erotic poems, he was called the naughty boy of American poetry. Critics say that his poetry enjoys its greatest popularity with undergraduates in college. This, they say, is a sign of his immaturity. Some point to his happy-go-lucky style and his lack of discipline, and suggest that he played the role of a child because he feared the responsibilities of adult life. While this youthful play is also part of the identity of Unitarianism, some of you may see the announcement in the newsletter that next week you can wear your pajamas to church. In our congregations, we take a certain joy in behaving eccentrically, unconventionally, experimentally. Certainly, unconventionally in comparison to most churches in our community. Some will say that this is a sign that we, like Cummings, are immature. I prefer to think that it's a sign of our freshness and our vitality. The childish spirit is expressed in a poem by Cummings about a bird. "May my heart always be open to little birds who are the secrets of living. Whatever they sing is better than to know. And if men should not hear them, then men are old." Third, like us, Cummings preached the value of the natural, the physical world. The worship of the natural world was central to 19th century Unitarian Transcendentalists. Today it remains a central part of our religious identity. Cummings' erotic poems are part of this expression of the joy of the natural world. The connection with the physical is also expressed in his poems about the stars, the trees, and the birds. So as we worship on this first Sunday in March, I want to close with a wonderful poem about spring. O sweet, spontaneous earth, how often have the doting fingers of the prudent philosophers pinched and poked thee? Has the knotty thumb of science prodded thy beauty? How often have religions taken thee upon their scraggly knees, squeezing and buffeting thy that thou mightest conceive gods? But true to the incomparable couch of death, thy rhythmic lover, thou answerest them only with spring.